This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Leanne Brown is a poet living between two worlds. She was born in Japan but grew up in Charlotte and now splits her time between New York City and Marshall, North Carolina. But her devotion to her home state is illustrated in two new books. They're called In the Laurels Caught and Crowns of Charlotte, and they are the first two volumes of her North Carolina Ode series. Leanne Brown teaches at St. John's University in New York and edits Tender Buttons Press. She also started the French Broad Institute in Marshall and joins us now from a studio at WCQS in Asheville. Welcome to the program, Leanne.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Talk a little bit about this business of splitting your time now between Marshall and New York City and being born in Japan, raised in Charlotte. Does that help a poet sort of having, sort of navigating these two worlds?
Sure. I love the variety of existence that I have, and it is sometimes a challenge to switch mindsets, but it stimulates me to, you know, write more and have more experience. And I always think of Charles Kuralt, who was actually in my dad's high school class in Charlotte, saying that, you know, that New York City was really a lot of little villages made up, you know, all put together. And I think that's really true, that you'd know the people in your neighborhood. And it's really not that different in a way, but it's like you know people in the street. You see people like, you just can't like always look people in the eye like you do in North Carolina.
Well, and you talked about the difference, you know, the having to switch from one to the other. But it seems to me that keeping a little bit of that perspective from one to look at the other gives you a point of view that maybe some of the locals and your neighbors and friends don't quite have.
Yeah, I'm very conscious of trying to bring together some more avant-garde and experimental kind of strategies that I've learned over the years. Being in a major metropolitan kind of scene, you know, to my work as a Southern poet and try to claim my, you know, sort of come back and claim my right as a North Carolina writer, but with a twist and a subversion and a kind of a different way to look at this amazing material we have here and local heroes we need to sing about and, you know, just the forms that we have available to us here.
What's interesting that you would call yourself a North Carolina or a Southern poet, is it important for you to have that kind of as a foundation to explore then these experimental types that you talk about?
Yeah, I identify strongly with another artist who you probably know, Romare Bearden, who was born in Charlotte. And I pretty much you know, see Charlotte as my home, even though I was born in Japan. My dad was teaching overseas, we're from a family that's been there for eight generations or so. But, you know, he had visions of his childhood throughout his life in his work. And I feel that very strongly that my childhood is a very strong source of my work. And I wanted to really, you know, go back into that and claim that. And I'm in New York, people are really interested in the things that I've brought from that experience as well.
Can we hear
a
poem?
In the way of speaking, you know.
Yeah, well, we'll talk more about that. I'd like to hear a poem right now. And then, I'd love to know what it is that New Yorkers want to hear from a North Carolina poet. But please read a poem for us.
Thanks. I'll start with what I call Transformation Hymn, which is a rewritten hymn. It's the original most people know as A Mighty Fortress Is Our God by Martin Luther. And I thought it was a little bit warlike and it needed to be refigured. So I wrote this. Almighty fortresses, open your doors. All swords to plowshares beaten. Why do our leaders lead us to war? All vengeful hatred eaten. For still our ancient foe within us each doth grow. Our need this hour is great. Disarm this cruel fate. Our words of love undo it.
Leanne Brown, reading from her latest volume, Crowns of Charlotte, singing, in fact, a transformation hymn. Well, tell us about that, the idea of using this form, a very formal way of presenting poetry through song and verse. Why choose that? Why take this form and transform it and not come up with a whole new way of saying the same thing?
There's multiple reasons for that. One is just that people already have that tune and that structure and that rhyme in their bodies and their minds. So you, if you tap into that, they sort of, it resonates more strongly, and then they see the difference and they sort of get it in a different way. And then one, another reason is, this is just one of my first poetic forms. When I went to church in Charlotte, North Carolina, in First Presbyterian Church, and learned prosody through hymns, singing hymns in the balcony with my mom. And, you know, that kind of, that form is just really embedded in my sinews, you know, that's my form. And like Emily Dickinson, of course, did that too. Right. Most all of her poems are in the ballad meter or hymn meter.
Tell us about the title of this volume, Crowns of Charlotte. You thought about that.
Yes, it alludes to several things. What the main thing I think of, first of all, is just the last 15 poems in the book are an ode to Queen Charlotte, and so it's a crowning poem. A crown of sonnets is a poem that is linked by the sonnet. The last line of each sonnet is the first line of the next, and it makes a circular form. The last poem being all the lines at the end joined up to make a jewel crown. But it's also, I think of DNA like a crown, like a spiral. These forms allude to both my family history and also an ode, like singing something, crowning something with praise.
So you give a lot of thought to form when you sit down and you write or you put it together, a volume like this or a series of volumes, Ode to North Carolina. Do you think about themes? Is North Carolina always on your mind, or are you collecting poems you've written and they suddenly occur to you that it occurs to you that's part of this series?
Well, I've always had North Carolina and the South as a theme in my work, but this was a very different move of consciously sort of writing an investigative poem and an ode. Like one of my impetuses was Charles Olson wrote the Maximus poems about his hometown of Gloucester, and he just did what Ed Sanders calls a saturation job on that space. You know, everything from the geology to the hearsay to the folk tales to everything is put in there. So it was a conscious decision to do this ode. But of course, you can see if you look at the word NC ode, it looks like in code. So there's some encoding that goes on, you know, in the book as well, like some acrostics or, you know, sort of formal tricks and, you know, secrets that are in the book. Like the first book, In the Laurels Caught, has a river poem that goes all the way along the bottom of the page. That's sort of a formal, playful element. But also just I think of an ode, it's a love poem, it's a praise poem for something that I love, but also the opposite that is entwined within it is an elegy. There's a lot of elegy. And I love that elegy can be a form of protest poetry as well.
Well, along those lines, would you read another one for us?
Sure. This is one I actually wrote toward the end of the composition of the book, and it was in response to a new friend, Amy Catanzano, who's the new poet at Wake Forest, and she wrote a blurb for the book, and she said to me about the war culture, which it was a theme in the book, but it says like anti-war thematics from my uncle who had been killed in Vietnam. And I have a brother-in-law whose family, he's from Baghdad, and there's a lot of different, his family is still there in Iraq, his parents and his cousins and everything. There were a lot of elements I was trying to bring together. And then my mother worked with refugee resettlement in Charlotte with the Hmong community. So this was a poem I was attempting to tie together some of those themes. So it's called Among Us, A-M-O-N-G, and it sort of puns with Hmong, H-M-O-N-G. Among us, we are each other's, mothers, sisters, brothers, fathers once in camps or encamped behind wires. War is over, I thought forever, as I blew my cornet in suburban backyard, age 12, 1975, drew peace sign and dove. No way to recover someone so close to those close to me, irrevocably gone in Vietnam. Unthinkable to release us from one war only to tie us to another and another. I had faith in the world. World, world, why are you still doing this killing? How can 7,000, or is it over 70,000, young Iraqi men be bulldozed alive under the burning sands of Iraq? The war comes home. Why are people afraid to open front doors, children to roam around? We have to start again. A poet said to me she was very tired, yet went on to rest, create again a place, to hold complex thought enmeshed in words, race, space, place, for party-colored people, new flavors raining down upon definition, the Hmong among us become us, tribal leaders ensconced, story quilts of escape, halfway to the mountains, red cord and chicken foot around wrists, seeds sown into clothes. Kalor wouldn't go into the house our church gave her family, a bird spirit trapped inside, battling windows with wings. No written language. Everything is alive. Seize the bondage around us daily. Next door slave times still cross town. All children are our children, growing up and living. All now our parents, our work, our word, our world.
Among Us, a poem from Leanne Brown's book of poetry, Crowns of Charlotte, and of course the references to the Hmong people, H-M-O-N-G, the mountain people of Laos, who helped the CIA during the Vietnam War, and many of whom found their way to this country because of the danger they were in after the war. You know, it also, there's a connection here, too, if you think about these refugee communities coming here, but also Charlotte, the Queen of England, and that puts us in mind of imperialism and colonialism, which brings us together for better and for worse. All of these histories come together, and we're somehow obligated to cope with them and, you know, make a sustainable, humane life out of sometimes brutal pasts.
Right.
Is this when you sit down with a poem like this? Are these is this language something that you have to work on over time? Do you do a lot of editing, or does it once the theme is sort of in you, do the words pour out?
it's different almost each time, but that particular poem, it sort of seemed like it had stored up for a long time, and I knew the language had to be charged and exact, and I was in a sort of heightened state, and I wrote it, and I did do some editing on it. I took a stanza out, and I took some words out and condensed it a little bit, but I get a musicality, and what Frank O'Hara calls like sort of going on your nerve, like you sort of build up this kind of energy, and then you sort of know you have to raise it up, you know, to a higher level, and every word has to count, so you're... It's like singing, you know, but in spoken language. There's always a musicality, but that helps raise it up.
Do you ever write a phrase, a line that is absolutely beautiful and you love it, you love the way the line works, and then you realize it's not musical in this. It's messed up the rhythm. I have to get rid of it. Has that ever happened?
Well, I'm always writing individual lines and collecting them in my notebooks, and I always usually find a place. If I love the line, I'll find a way to use it. It's like making a quilt, you know. It's like you just keep collecting things, and then you put them together, and somehow they go together because it's like your same mind writing it. Mm. There's going to be a way that it goes together. And like one example is I just love found poetry, and there's this one headline from New York, and I keep trying it in different poems, and I still haven't found the right place. It was like, I work in Queens, so I take the Jackie Robinson Parkway to work sometimes. It was like, an escaped Bengal tiger was spotted on Jackie Robinson Parkway. That's just a totally found line.
Wow.
And I just can't figure out where to put that. You know?
Yeah.
But now I've used it in about five poems, and I think it gets to stay in all those poems.
Yeah, but now you got those spots in between the stripes,
right.
And you just can't,
yes.
Right? Now you can't shake that image. So, yeah, right. you'll have to just make something work for that poem.
That's right.
Tell us about some of the other activities you're involved in, about the French Broad Institute that you founded. What does it do?
Well, it's in an old church that we bought on the main street of Marshall, North Carolina, right across from the firehouse. And it reminds me of some of the things you were saying in the last program about sustainability and community. And we just feel the need to do, you know, arts programming, especially with all these budget cuts, you know, for our community. But it's just a program a place where we do performance with poetry and music, theater. We're having a big puppet pageantry parade workshop coming up from co-sponsored with Handmade in America. And Martha Insman from Todd, North Carolina, from the Elkland Arts Center, going to make some puppets. We have a lot of puppet parades already, and right. Marshall, like mermaid parades and things like that. There's a lot of celebration going on down there.
Can we hear another poem?
Sure. I'm going to read from the last part of the book, The Double Crown for Charlotte, for Queen Charlotte. It's a 15-sonnet sequence, but I'm only going to read the first and the last.
Right.
So you'll see how the lines at the end come together. So... this is Double Crown for Charlotte, and it was, inspired by C.S. Giscombe, who told me that she had some African ancestry, which I didn't know, and I wanted everybody to know that, so that's one reason I wrote the poem. 1. The town I grew up in is feminine, a radiating spiral divided in two, named for Charlotte of Mecklenburg, a queen who had mixed bloodlines, all of them blue, African, Portuguese, and a Vandal or two. So this double crown I set out to hone, half on, half off, made up and true, 15 sonnets linked and sewn in all manner of newfangled rhyme. Only locals know which avenue wins over to trace a parallel line. Crowns for Charlotte, laurels for you. Queen Charlotte of Mecklenburg, now come forth to crown us all with a laurel wreath. And then the last is the uniting of all the end lines. The town I grew up in is feminine. To crown us all with a laurel wreath, I saw a map early on of north and south, and gloss in between lines. The greatest monarch of the north must bow in the bedroom. King George whines, oh, sing of human DNA's complexity. A dog which shows its teeth but never dares to decode a painting. One has to get close. Who didn't want to let go of their queen? Sophia Charlotte was also a painter, but my favorite is a photograph. Do me the favor to burn this if you love me and believe me.
That was from Double Crown for Charlotte, from Leanne Brown's book of poetry, Crowns of Charlotte. Leanne Brown, thank you so much. Beautiful poem.
Thank you for being with us. Thanks.
Leanne Brown is a poet who splits her time between Marshall, North Carolina, and New York City. Two new books of poetry, In the Laurels Caught and Crowns of Charlotte. They are the first two volumes of her NC Ode series. And for more information, you can go to our website, stateofthings.org. That's our program for today. Thanks for listening. This is North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.